Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. I'm your host, Stephen Overley, and today is March 5th. That means it's Super Tuesday, but not an especially exciting one. Former President Donald Trump is expected to beat out Nikki Haley. President Joe Biden doesn't have a serious challenger. And by the end of the day, we'll likely hear even more people talking about how the 2024 race is looking a lot like a 2020 rematch. But online, it's a very different contest. Generative AI is here, TikTok is a top social media platform, and some of the digital marketing tools that campaigns used last time around have changed radically or disappeared altogether. Eric Wilson is a Republican digital strategist who worked on Marco Rubio's 2016 presidential campaign. He also invests in right-leaning tech startups and hosts a podcast of his own called The Business of Politics Show. Eric and I talked about how 2024 is basically a brand new campaign multiverse and which candidates are winning the digital race. Here's our conversation. Eric, appreciate you being here on Politico Tech.
It's my pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
You know, we're kicking off Super Tuesday today. So let's start there. In your view, which candidate on the ballot has the smartest digital strategy?
That is a very loaded question, and I'm going to answer it in a complicated way, which is each campaign is trying to achieve different things with their digital strategy. And so we must judge each campaign within that framework. So with President Trump, his digital strategy is to maintain his dominance over the political conversation. Nikki Haley's campaign is focusing on building up the movement of volunteers, of dollars they need to keep running their campaign. Then, of course, President Biden has to make sure that he turns out his base of Democrats in November. That includes young voters who are increasingly becoming disillusioned by him. So across these three objectives, I think they're all trending in the right direction. It's just a matter of the political environment of whether that is successful or not.
As you're observing them, is anyone really standing out to you as kind of owning the digital space?
The Biden campaign is really out in front of one of the biggest challenges facing political campaigns, not just presidential campaigns, but up and down the ballot in 2024 and beyond, which is the fragmentation of attention. So voters are spending their time on more platforms than ever before. They're spending their time on more streaming services and TV viewing options than ever before. And so their approach to try and bundling all of this attention back together is through influencer outreach and then making sure that the right organizations or allies within the Democratic coalition have the data they need to target. The Trump campaign strategy is largely to make sure that he is the only thing being talked about across all of those platforms when it comes to politics. So we really are seeing kind of the diminishing capability of the bully pulpit of being in the White House. And the Biden campaign is hiring, investing in trying to pull that back together.
What's interesting to hear that sort of analysis, you know, back in 2020, you gave an interview with Politico. You said that the Trump campaign was running a masterclass in digital marketing in that cycle. Are you seeing that same strategy this time around, or has it evolved?
The Trump campaign is very focused on their digital marketing from messaging and persuasion. One of the things that has changed since we spoke in 2020 was restrictions that Facebook and Apple have placed on targeted advertising. So people will remember the iOS 14 update that made them opt in of whether they wanted to have their privacy invaded by every app, really killed the direct marketing landscape for a lot of people, but especially political candidates and campaigns. And in 2022, you had Meta pull back a lot of the options for targeting. So the tools that the Trump campaign was able to tap into in 2020 aren't there in 2024. We don't have a new playbook yet. We don't know what the solution is. And so they're really focused on making sure that the Trump message gets amplified to the base. And you are seeing them invest in online fundraising, building their email lists, things like that. And his rallies and in-person events continue to be a really popular draw for getting people to opt in for campaign communication.
It's interesting hearing, you know, that some of the tools he used in 2020 are just not there this time around. And, you know, notably, platforms like Twitter, now X, Facebook, or YouTube were a main messaging channel for Trump 4 years ago. He used to flame opponents there. He used to make promises to his voters there. He doesn't have the same presence now on those platforms that he did then. You know, partially by choice, he just doesn't engage there as much since he was banned and then allowed back on. Are those platforms just irrelevant to him this time around?
They're not irrelevant. We have data that shows that 60% of voters log into Facebook every single day. So it is still an important platform for voters to get news and information. Same thing with X, particularly for those like ourselves who shape the political narrative. We're still there.
Right.
We're still addicted to the platform. So they're still relevant. They've just changed in how heavy they are or how much weight they bring into the conversation because there are so many other options. You know, you think about where TikTok was in 2020 versus where it is today, for example, and that has really changed the ecosystem. Obviously, President Trump has his own platform in Truth Social that he has decided to prioritize over others. And if you go and look at the Trump campaign's social media efforts, they're taking a lot of comments from Truth Social, repackaging them for Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
I think what has changed is the way the media covers that, as well as the sort of density of political news coverage, which has gone down as well.
I do want to talk about TikTok, which you mentioned before. You've said in the past, Republicans either need to kill TikTok or they need to embrace it, but they can't just simply cede it to Democrats. I mean, right now, President Biden's campaign is now on TikTok. Trump's campaign is not. What impact do you think that will have?
Well, it comes down to whether you want to have your side of the story in the mix or not. And our job as political campaigners, now that's separate from policymakers, our job as political campaigners is to reach the right voters with the right message at the right moment on the right mediums from the right messengers, right? So we have all the tools to do that. With TikTok, you have approximately half of the country on the platform as regular users. They're getting news and information. We're seeing it become one of the most important search engines for young people in this country who can also vote. And search engines are an important part of the research process for determining how you vote. I think it's a missed opportunity for Republicans to step back and say, we don't like this platform. We believe it should be banned. And therefore, it would be hypocritical of us to engage on the platform. I understand that logic. I think it's a missed opportunity.
Right.
You know, I don't like tomatoes, but if I'm a candidate, I'm going to show up at the tomato festival where 10,000 voters are going to be on a weekend. Right. So that's really the challenge confronting candidates right now. And so in an era when it is so difficult to reach voters, to get their attention, we have to reach for any lifeline that comes our way. And TikTok is that lifeline for now.
Does Biden joining the platform kind of give some Republicans, especially at the national level, kind of a cover to join themselves? Because he's been critical of TikTok and suggested it's a national security threat, but now his campaign is on it.
Unfortunately, I think Republicans are going to use it more as a cudgel of hypocrisy than as a cover for engaging themselves. The calculus is different between Republicans and Democrats. If you're a Democrat, you are desperate for ways to reach your coalition and your voters, especially those who are younger. And Republicans can kind of delay that problem a little bit longer. I think it's a missed opportunity for sure, but I don't think it's as mission critical for Republican campaigns as it is for Democrats.
Just based on like the demographics of their voting bloc and where they are online?
Exactly.
We'll be right back. We were talking earlier about the tools in the 2020 cycle that are not as available today. You know, some social media platforms are now deprioritizing political content. You know, they're either putting more restrictions on ads or they've said their algorithms just won't actively promote content that is political. I mean, what effect is that having on campaigns? How well are they navigating those changes?
Well, these moves, especially the platforms that are outright banning political advertising, places like Netflix, Microsoft, LinkedIn, TikTok, for example, make it very difficult to reach voters there. And campaigns don't really have a good way to overcome that. It is a challenge anytime we can't reach voters where they are spending lots of time getting news and information about politics. And that also creates a civic participation death spiral, right? So we talk to the people who are going to go vote, encourage them to vote. But if you are on a platform where you're unreachable by political campaigns, we're not able to get to you. And so there's a huge role by campaigns in this country to turn out voters. And so those policies, I think, are harmful to making sure that we get people to participate, to be aware of the issues involved in elections. So I'm very disappointed about that. And I think it's not only is it a headache for campaigns, I think it's got lots of unintended consequences for our government as well. Another challenge that we face is the restrictions on privacy writ large for advertising. And that affects other advertisers, not just political advertisers. So again, just really being hit with a 1-2 punch on our ability to reach voters, to talk to them.
And how are campaigns handling that? I mean, are they finding workarounds? Are they finding other platforms that they can reach audiences on? Or is it just sort of a lost cause in a way?
If you dig into the numbers, campaigns are continuing to really invest in the channels that we are welcome on and know work. So that's mail, TV, earned media, and platforms like Meta, Google, YouTube, and making sure that we really do everything we can in those buckets. And since both sides are sort of boxed out of the different channels, then, you know, you're on an equal playing field there. But we'll have to wait and see in November if, for all the work that we do on campaigns to reach voters and deliver messages to them, do bad actors or people playing outside of the rules have a greater impact?
I mean, we can't talk about campaign technology without talking about generative AI, certainly in this campaign cycle. A lot of these AI platforms have also restricted how their systems can be used for politics. Is that affecting how campaigns actually use AI? Have campaigns found end runs around those policies? What are you seeing?
The way we're seeing campaigns use generative AI is more mundane than the moral panic would lead you to believe. It's things like drafting emails, taking bullet points and turning them into press releases. So it's really boring stuff. But it's helpful to speed up the content creation because the appetite for content on a campaign is growing and growing and growing. Our budgets, our bandwidth is not. And so AI is very helpful in that regard. There's a lot of concern, I think a lot of it unfounded, about deepfakes, people pretending to be someone else that they're not, and policies need to be in place to protect against that. But it goes back to the same challenge that the bad actors, the people who really only want chaos in our system, not necessarily for one side to win over the other, they just want there to be disagreement and conflict and chaos, they're going to use those tools. It's the good guys, the legitimate campaign actors that are going to abide by the rules and not use those AI tools. So I really think these platforms need to take a more thoughtful approach to how they allow campaigns to use AI. That requires a little bit of nuance and digging in and maybe withstanding a little bit of conflict even internally when there are candidates saying things that your employees don't like.
We have seen AI-generated deepfakes on the campaign trail, not coming from the campaigns themselves, but coming from these outside actors, as you mentioned. Obviously, there was this high-profile case in New Hampshire of an AI-generated robocall using President Biden's voice. I was just reading a story from BBC News about AI-generated images, essentially trying to portray President Trump as more popular with Black voters. Is this a nightmare scenario for campaigns right now, dealing with AI-generated deepfakes? Is there potential upside to this? How are campaigns and folks in your world thinking about it?
I think it's important that anytime we hear an example of kind of those nightmare scenarios of artificial intelligence, we think about the ways that generative AI can actually serve campaigns and help voters. So for example, in India, where you have a lot of different regional languages, it allows candidates to campaign in the voters' native tongues, even if they themselves don't speak that language. So we have that possibility here in the United States, where a candidate may not speak Spanish, but they're creating videos that are then transformed into Spanish language or even other smaller language groups. That's just one example of the positive effect. Then you look at the cost that goes into running an effective campaign. That's one of the reasons that we're spending more money on politics every cycle. Generative AI tools can bring that cost down, allow candidates that don't have as much funding to create sophisticated TV ads. But if we take the approach of AI in any form is always bad when it comes to politics, you're not just throwing out the baby with the bathwater, but you're not even turning on the faucet.
I'm curious if you've seen on the campaign trail any innovative uses of AI that feel distinct and new this time around that maybe you have not seen in the past.
Well, unfortunately, I think there's a big chilling effect around the use of AI, where we know it's being used by political professionals and campaign operatives. But because there's so much scrutiny around this, they're not eager to talk about it because, you know, OpenAI, for example, the maker of ChatGPT, is very clear that you are not allowed to use it for political campaigning. So the moment someone talks about what they're doing, it's likely they're going to get shut off from that. So it makes it very risky for people to invest any sort of time or resources into this. And also, we're just not going to hear about it, which I think is probably not what we want to have.
You know, in addition to doing your digital strategy work, you're also a managing partner at Startup Caucus, which is an incubator and investment fund for Republican campaign technology firms. What emerging technologies are you seeing that you feel will shake up future campaigns?
Well, we are obviously very excited about AI, but it's a risky place to invest in right now because we don't know what the platform policies are, nor do we know what state and federal regulations are going to be.
Right.
What we're focused on is, again, I'm really all about that boring, mundane stuff that makes campaigns more effective, more efficient, eliminating waste. So tools that help campaigns manage their budgets more effectively, track their spending, making sure that they're targeting the right voters and using different types of AI, like machine learning, to improve their voter models. And then we're obviously very interested in influencer marketing and influencer outreach, because that continues to grow as an avenue for reaching voters as sort of traditional means of marketing and communication are becoming less effective.
It seems to me with every presidential election cycle, we do see sort of some new technology or use of technology emerge, right? We've seen in past cycles, big data, data analytics become the focus, social media become the focus. As we think about the cycle we're in now for 2024, I wonder how you would sort of sum up the digital technology landscape and what is new this time around.
So this is always a really tricky question, because I remember in 2015, your colleagues at Politico wrote a story about how 2016 was going to be the meerkat election. If you don't know what meerkat is, you could be forgiven because it didn't even make it to the Iowa caucuses.
Right.
Jeb Bush's campaign lasted longer than meerkat in 2016. And so what was the kernel of truth there, which is social video, live streaming video? That was the trend that really shaped 2016 in a lot of ways. So I think there's a lot of focus spent on AI. The kernel of truth there is the content generation. So again, we're all confronting this fragmentation challenge. And so people who are able to use tools like AI to create content for all their various audiences are going to excel. So I think if we're doing an assessment of the campaign in December of 2024, we're looking at who is able to bundle attention back together the best, whether that was through tools like relational organizing, which I think is going to get a big boost this election cycle, where you're using friend-to-friend outreach and influencer marketing. So those relationships, whether they're one-to-one or one-to-many, are going back to the roots of what campaigns are all about. And we've got the tech now to do that at scale. So I think that's going to be the big takeaway. Unfortunately, it doesn't fit neatly into here's the killer app.
Right. Well, no, it's fascinating. And I'm not to say it's sort of an anti-tech trend or an anti-tech takeaway, but this sort of return to relationships and connection, in some ways, you know, it feels like technology has taken that from us, not just in politics, but in many aspects of life. And so it's interesting to see folks recognizing that and trying to counteract that in this campaign cycle.
Yep. It's back to the future.
Back to the future. Exactly. Appreciate you joining us on Politico Tech.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.